Chapter 15. Bruce stood in the centre of the tracks and searched the floor of the forest critically. At last he could make out the muzzle of the Bren protruding a few inches from the patch of elephant grass. Despite the fact that he knew exactly where to look for it, it had taken him a full 2 minutes to find it. "That'll do, Ruffy," he decided. "We can't get it much better than that."
"I reckon not, boss."
Bruce raised his voice.
"Can you hear me?"
There were muffled affirmatives from the bush on each side, and Bruce continued. "If they come, you must let them reach this spot before you open fire. I will mark it for you." He went to a small shrub beside the line, broke off a branch, and dropped it on the tracks.
"Can you see that?"
Again the affirmatives from the men in ambush. "You will be relieved before darkness. Until then, stay where you are." The train was hidden beyond a bend in the line, half a mile ahead, and Bruce walked back with Ruffy. The engine driver was waiting for them, talking with Wally Hendry beside the rear truck.
"Any luck?"
Bruce asked him.
"I regret, mon capitaine, that she is irreparably damaged. The boiler is punctured in two places, and there is considerable disruption of the copper tubing."
"Thank you," Bruce nodded. He was neither surprised nor disappointed. It was precisely what his own judgment had told him after a brief examination of the locomotive.
"Where is Madame Cartier?" he asked Wally.
"Madame is preparing the luncheon, monsieur,"
Wally told him with heavy sarcasm.
"Why do you ask, bucko? Are you feeling randy again so soon, hey? You feel like a slice of veal for lunch, is that it?"
Bruce snuffed out the quick flare of his temper and walked past him. He found Charmaine with four gendarmes in the cab of the locomotive. They had scraped the coals from the furnace into a glowing heap on the steel floor and were chopping potatoes and onions into the 5-gallon pots. The gendarmes were all laughing at something Charmaine had said. Her usually pale cheeks were flushed with the heat. There was a sooty smudge on her forehead. She wielded the big knife with professional dexterity. She looked up and saw Bruce, her face lighting instantly and her lips parting.
"We are having a Hungarian goulash for lunch, bully beef, potatoes and onions."
"As of now, I'm rating you acting second cook without pay."
"You are too kind,"
and she put her tongue out at him. It was a pink, pointed little tongue, like a cat's. Bruce felt the old familiar tightening of his legs and the dryness in his throat as he looked at it.
"Charmaine, the locomotive is damaged beyond repair. It is of no further use."
He spoke in English.
"It makes a passable kitchen," she demurred.
"Be serious." Bruce's anxiety made him irritable. "We're stranded here until we think of something."
"But Bruce, you are the genius. I have complete faith in you. I'm sure you'll think of some truly beautiful idea."
Her face was solemn, but she couldn't keep the banter out of her eyes.
"Why don't you go and ask General Moses to lend you his transportation?"
Bruce's eyes narrowed in thought, and the black inverted curves of his eyebrows nearly touched above the bridge of his nose. "The food better be good, or I'll break you to third cook," he warned, clambered down from the cab to the ground and hurried back along the train.
"Hendry, Sergeant Major, come here, please. I want to discuss something with you."
They came to join him, and he led the way up the ladder into one of the covered coaches. Hendry dropped onto the bunk and placed his feet on the washbasin.
"That was a quick one," he grinned through the coppery stubble of his beard.
"You are the most uncouth, filthy-mouthed son of a bitch I have ever met, Hendry," said Bruce coldly. "When I get you back to Elizabethville, I'm going to beat you to pulp before I hand you over to the military authority for murder."
"My, my," laughed Hendry. "Big talker, hey? Curry, big, big talker."
"Don't make me kill you now. Don't do that, please. I still need you."
"What's with you and that Frenchie, hey? You love it or something? You love it or you just fancy a bit of that fat little ass? It can't be her titties. She ain't got much there, not even a handful each side."
Bruce started for him, then changed his mind and swung round to stare out of the window. His voice was strangled when he spoke. I'll make a bargain with you, Hendry. Until we get out of this, you keep off my back and I'll keep off yours. When we reach Msapa Junction, the truce is off. You can do and say whatever you like, and if I don't kill you for it, I'll try my level best to see you hanged for murder. I'm making no bargain with you or nobody, Curry. I play along until it suits me, and I won't give you no warning when it doesn't suit me to play along any more. And let me tell you now, Bucko, I don't need you and I don't need nobody. Not Haig or you, with your fancy too-good-to-kiss-my-ass talk. When the time comes, I'm going to trim you down to size. Just remember that, Curry. And don't say I didn't warn you. Hendry was leaning forward, hands on his knees, body braced and his whole face twisting and contorted with the vehemence of his speech. Let's make it now, Hendry. Bruce wheeled away from the window, crouching slightly, his hands stiffening into the flat, hard blades of the judo fighter. Sergeant Major Ruffarero stood up from the opposite bunk with surprising grace and speed for such a big man. He interposed his great body.
You wanted to tell us something, boss.
Slowly, Bruce straightened out of his crouch, his hands relaxing. Irritably, he brushed at the damp lock of dark hair that had fallen onto his forehead, as if to brush Wally Hendry out of his mind with the same movement.
Yes, controlling his voice with an effort. I wanted to discuss our next move.
He fished the cigarette pack from his top pocket and lit one, sucking the smoke down deep. Then he perched on the lid of the wash basin and studied the ash on the tip of the cigarette. When he spoke again, his voice was normal. There's no hope of repairing this locomotive, so we have to find alternative transport out of here. Either we can walk 200 miles back to Msapa Junction with our friends the Baluba ready to dispute our passage, or we can ride back in General Moses' trucks. He paused to let it sink in.
"You going to pinch those trucks off him?" asked Ruffy. "That's going to take some doing, boss."
"No, Ruffy, I don't think we have any chance of getting them out from under his nose. What we will have to do is attack the town and wipe him out."
"You're bloody crazy!" exclaimed Wally. "You're raving bloody mad!"
Bruce ignored him. "I estimate that Moses has about 60 men, with Kanaki and 9 men on the bridge, Haig and Desurier and 6 others gone. We have 34 men left. Correct, Sergeant Major?"
"That's right, boss."
"Very well," Bruce nodded. "We'll have to leave at least 10 men here to man that ambush in case Moses sends a patrol after us, or in case of an attack by the Baluba. It's not enough, I know, but we will just have to risk it."
"Most of these civilians got arms with them, shotguns and sports rifles," said Ruffy.
"Yes," agreed Bruce. "They should be able to look after themselves. So that leaves 24 men to carry out the attack, something like 3-1.
Those Shifter will be so full of liquor, half of them won't be able to stand up.
That's what I'm banking on, drunkenness and surprise. We'll hit them and try and finish it before they know what's happened. I don't think they'll have realized how badly we were hit. They probably expect us to be 100 miles away by now."
"When do you want to leave, boss?"
"We're about 12 miles from Port Reprieve, say 6 hours' march in the dark. I want to attack in the early hours of tomorrow morning, but I'd like to be in position around midnight. We'll leave here at 6 o'clock, just before dark."
"I'd better go and start sorting the boys out."
"Okay, Ruffy. Issue an extra 100 rounds to each man and 10 grenades. I want 4 extra haversacks of grenades also." Bruce turned to Hendry and looked at him for the first time.
"Go with the Sergeant Major, Hendry, and give him a hand." "Jesus, this is going to be a ball," grinned Wally in anticipation. "With any luck, I'll get me a sack full of ears."
He disappeared down the corridor behind Ruffy, and Bruce lay back on the seat and took off his helmet. He closed his eyes, and once again he saw Bussier and his wife standing together in the truck as it rolled back down the hill. He saw the huddle of frightened women, and André standing bareheaded, staring back at him with big, brown, gentle eyes. He groaned softly. Why is it always the good ones? The harmless? The weak? A tap on the door roused him, and he sat up quickly.
Yes?
Hello, Bruce. Chemain came in with a multiple-decked metal canteen in one hand and two mugs in the other. "It's lunchtime." "Already?" Bruce checked his watch. "Good Lord, it's after one. Are you hungry?"
"Breakfast was a century ago."
"Good," she said, lowered the collapsible table and began serving the food.
"Smells good."
"I am a chef cordon bleu. My bully beef goulash is demanded by the crowned heads of Europe."
They ate in silence, for both of them were hungry. Once they looked at each other and smiled, but returned to the food.
"That was good," sighed Bruce at last.
"Coffee, Bruce?"
"Please."
As she poured it, she asked, "So what happens now?"
"Do you mean, what happens now we're alone?"
"You are forward, monsieur."
"I meant, how do we get out of here?"
"I'm adopting your suggestion, borrowing General Moses' transportation."
"You make jokes, Bruce."
"No," he said, and explained briefly.
"It will be very dangerous, will it not? You may be hurt."
"Only the good die young.
That is why I worry.
Please do not get hurt."
"I am starting to think I would not like that."
Her face was very serious and pale. Bruce crossed quickly and stooped over her, lifting her to her feet.
"Chemain, I..."
"No, Bruce. Don't talk. Don't say anything." Her eyes were closed with thick black lashes interlaced, her chin lifted, exposing the long, smooth swell of her neck. He touched it with his lips, and she made a soft noise in her throat so he could feel the skin vibrate. Her body flattened against his, and her fingers closed in the hair at the back of his head.
"Oh, Bruce, my Bruce, please do not get hurt. Do not let them hurt you."
Wanting now, urgently, his mouth hunted upwards and hers came to meet it, willing prey. Her lips were pink and not greased with makeup. They parted to the pressure of his tongue. He felt the tip of her nose cool upon his cheek, and his hand moved up her back and closed round the nape of her neck, slender neck, with silky down behind her ears.
"Oh, Bruce," she said into his mouth.
His other hand went down onto the proud, round, deeply divided thrust of her buttocks. He pulled her lower body against his, and she gasped as she felt him, the arrogant maleness through cloth. "No," she gasped, and tried to pull away, but he held her until she relaxed against him once more. She shook her head. "No, no." But her mouth was open still, and her tongue fluttered against his. Down came his hand from her neck and twitched her shirt tails loose from under her belt, then up again along her back, touching the deep lateral depression of her spine so that she shuddered, clinging to him. Stroking velvet skin stretched tight over rubber-hard flesh, finding the outline of her shoulder blades, tracing them upwards, then back to the armpits, silky-haired armpits that maddened him with excitement, quickly passed them to her breasts, small breasts, with soft tips hardening to his touch. Now she struggled in earnest, her fists beating on his shoulders and her mouth breaking from his, and he stopped himself, dropped the hand away to encircle her waist, holding her loosely within his arms.
"That was not good, Bruce. You get naughty very quick."
Her cheeks flamed with colour, and her blue eyes had darkened to royal. Her lips still wet from his, and her voice was unsteady as his when he answered.
"I'm sorry, Chemain. I don't know what happened then. I did not mean to frighten you."
"You are very strong, Bruce, but you do not frighten me, only a little bit. Your eyes frighten me when they look at me, but do not see."
"You really made a hash of that one," he rebuked himself.
"Bruce Curry, the gentle, sophisticated lover. Bruce Curry, the heavyweight catch-as-catch-can, two-fisted rape artist." He felt shaky, his legs wobbly, and there was something seriously wrong with his breathing.
You do not wear a brassiere," he said without thinking, and immediately regretted it.
But she chuckled, soft and husky.
"Do you think I need to, Bruce?" No, I didn't mean that, he protested quickly, remembering the saucy tilt of that small breast. He was silent then, marshalling his words, trying to control his breathing, fighting down the madness of desire. She studied his eyes. You can see again now. Perhaps I will let you kiss me. Please, he said, and she came back to him. Gently now, Bruce, my boy. The door of the compartment flew back with a crash, and they jumped apart. Wally Hendry stood on the threshold. Well, well, well. His shrewd little eyes took it all in. That's nice. Charmaine was hurriedly tucking in her shirt tail and trying to smooth her hair at the same time. Wally grinned. Nothing like it after a meal, I always say. Gets the digestion going. What do you want? Snapped Bruce. There's no doubt what you want, said Wally. Looks like you're getting it, too. He let his eyes travel up from Charmaine's waist, slowly over her body to her face. Bruce stepped out into the corridor, pushing Hendry back and slammed the door. What do you want?
Ruffy wants you to check his arrangements, but I'll tell him you're busy. Well, you can put the attack off until tomorrow night if you like.
Bruce scowled at him. Tell him I'll be with him in 2 minutes. Wally leaned against the door. Okay, I'll tell him. What are you waiting for?
Nothing. Just nothing, grinned Wally.
Well, bugger off then, snarled Bruce.
Okay, okay, don't get your knickers in a knot, bucko.
He sauntered off down the corridor. Charmaine was standing where Bruce had left her, but with her eyes bright with tears of anger. He's a pig, that one. A filthy, filthy pig. He's not worth worrying about. Bruce tried to take her in his arms again, but she shrugged him off.
I hate him. He makes everything seem so cheap, so dirty.
Nothing between you and I could be cheap and dirty, said Bruce, and instantly her fury abated.
I know, my Bruce, but he can make it seem that way.
They kissed gently. I must go. They want me. For a second she clung to him.
Be careful. Promise me you'll be careful.
I promise, said Bruce, and she let him go.